Now, there are hundreds of verses in the Old Testament about fathers instructing their children in God's ways. The Proverbs is a whole book about fathers instructing their children. We've already given a teaching on the rod and the staff. You remember what the rod is? The rod is correction with a stick. It's a stick, a spanking stick. You will never, ever get knowledge in school. School knowledge is merely head knowledge. And not only that, school knowledge, what you learn at school, is not only just head knowledge, it's not mastery. So you're not even getting any discipline, any character training, any faith. So you have no foundation for learning. But not only that, because of that, you're only getting the most superficial knowledge or acquaintance with the material, but no real instruction or teaching. So you're getting knowledge without any foundation. You have no way to relate it to anything, and that's why children today are dumb. The school systems make children dumb because there can't be any instruction. The instruction is no longer transmitting some information, but it's attempting to transform someone without God, which you cannot do. You can't change a person without God. So at best, it would be behavioral modification through making them feel good or whatever. And in the end, you've just raised a generation of dumb and rebellious children who have no fear of God, who have no real knowledge, who have no wisdom, and who have no capacity to operate in the world. So our school system is the worst place you could send your children today to become educated. Now, there's always a few, however, who can get through the school system, and those few that get through the school system are those that have moral and religious training at home. Without that foundation or basis, you couldn't have any training. So I'm going to teach you tonight about teaching your children in part of the child raising or training of children, which is more than just getting knowledge. It's also training through the rod and the staff. The rod is the stick that spanks, and the staff is the voice of the instructor guiding and leading the way. All right, we read here the Proverbs of Solomon, the Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David. David learned from his father, I'm sorry, Solomon learned from his father David, and David learned from his father, Jesse, and Solomon then had to train his child, his children, his sons. The Proverbs of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom, chokmah, and instruction to perceive the words of understanding, binah. So I wrote those two words up on the board. So he's going to teach chokmah and binah and many other words which I've written down in your paper that you have as an instruction manual for what I'm going to teach tonight. To receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment. Okay, so justice is that which takes regular mishpat and brings it into equity or fairness. So you're going to learn both justice, judgment, and equity, all three. And you have to have wisdom to be a judge because you have to discern between right and wrong. To give subtlety to the simple. So simple is what our school systems now teach. The school systems today teach the simple to stay simple. And that's why they've dumbed them down. So you've heard many people say that our school systems dumb down the children. They are actually leaving them dumb. You don't have to dumb them down. They're already dumb. But you're leaving them dumber. You're making them dumber. Because Kids, for example, if they study science, they have no knowledge of the laws of science because they study things like evolution, which is not at all science. And so kids get tired of it then because it doesn't make any sense. It has no reference point. It has no skeleton upon which to build. It has no truth, emet. It has no truth. It has no wisdom. It has no character training. It has no fear of God. It has nothing. So our school systems today are pitiful. And you do well not to put your children in school if you want them to grow up with any character or conduct or knowledge or training or mastery of the subjects. You cannot learn through the school system. You can only play a game called feel good, get along with other children and behave yourself, meaning follow the crowd and do not be an individual. So you could never learn in our school systems today. They are built on the communist system. They are built on what they call the Prussian system of Germany. But they lack all of the informational or transmissional facts, and they only have transformational or turning you into a slave kind of capacity now. They don't really want children who think. They want children who just simply obey the political system, the workforce. And so they're not training you for any kind of leadership. Anyway, enough on what we have in today's school system. I'm just warning you that it's not real instruction. So, number four, to give subtlety to the simple, to the young man, knowledge and discretion, to become discreet. To become discreet is what I do. I teach wisdom. I teach knowledge. I teach discretion. I teach by rod and by the staff, so that you not only know things about God, but you actually know God and fear Him. And if you gain the fear of God, it's with authority. I teach with authority. I don't teach with opinion. I'm not just giving an opinion. I'm not just entertaining thoughts for people to get a hold of, or making them feel good, or anything else. I'm actually telling you the truth, and the truth will set you free from ignorance and from slavery. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, but a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels. To understand a proverb, something that has one meaning on its surface, but another use or purpose underneath its surface, and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings. So oftentimes language is equivocal rather than univocal. Equivocal means it could bear one or more meanings, uses, could have many usages. It could have many connotations, though it may only have one denotation. A denotation means to kick the bucket would mean denotatively to, with your foot, kick a bucket. But connotatively, it might mean to die. So to kick the bucket could mean either kicking a bucket with your foot. John went out to the barn and kicked the bucket out of the way. That's kicking the bucket. But in our colloquial language, it bears a second meaning or another usage, which is he died. And I could go on and give many axiomatic and interesting uses of the connotative values of language, which are subtle and supple. So to instruct someone is to teach them all of those things so they don't make common mistakes, that they're able to discern truth from falsity, logic from illogic, and so on. To understand a proverb, verse 6, and the interpretation, the words of the wise and their dark sayings, equivocal, and learn then which ones are univocal. 2 + 2 = 4 is univocal. Even though someone could twist it, it's hard to twist that one. 2 + 2 = 4. So that is understood in any language. That's understood in any culture. You have two apples. I have two apples. We put them together and we get four apples. So that is not subject to interpretation or many meanings. It just means 2 + 2 = 4. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. So you see how those words are used almost interchangeably, yet they're not quite interchangeable. So what is wisdom? What is training? What is teaching? What is tradition? What is knowledge? What is wisdom? They're all different words. They have different denotative foundations, and they have different connotative. Sometimes they all mean the same. To gain wisdom and instruction could be the same thing, but there's an and there, which indicates they have some differences to them. So I'm not going to give you all the subtleties tonight, but I will introduce them to you, not with depth. I will introduce them to you so that you're acquainted with the different words, and later you will get knowledge. My son, hear the instruction of your father, and do not forsake the law of your mother. So mothers and fathers were the first teachers, all right? They shall be an ornament of grace unto thy head and chains about thy neck. In other words, like Joseph in Egypt would have a collar around his neck that would show that he was the ruler of Egypt, that would be, that's the way to get, when you're young, instruction. Put it around your neck, it's your authority. And you won't have any power in life, which is your sword or your rod, in this case the rod of instruction. You won't have any power behind that or with that unless you have wisdom, because otherwise I'll use my club to beat the good guy and the bad guy, and I'll just be a tyrant. A tyrant is someone that beats bad people but protects good people. It's just the opposite. A tyrant is someone who is able to discern, this is a bad person and I have wisdom. Huh? I said tyrant again. Well, anyway, whatever. My point is that the good guy knows how to discern between the right use of the rod and the wrong use of the rod. The right use is on bad people, and the right use is to protect the good people with it by beating the bad person away. So that would be justice. That would be equity, and so on and so forth. So all these words are very rich, and they have many, many meanings. And so then to be educated in our culture is to know the meaning of words. And our culture today does not have any common understanding of words. Almost every word today in our culture is equivocal, and it has no common, you cannot get a dictionary and figure out what somebody means by the word Republican, or the word Republic, or the word Democrat, or the word democracy, or any other word. Every word is completely confusing depending on who's using it and to what purpose. So even the word God, there are no words that have any common meaning to you and your neighbor. You cannot even communicate to someone else because they have no idea what you're talking about. All words have fallen down. It means your culture is gone. You don't have a culture anymore. So we've completely lost our culture because we cannot argue from foundation any longer, and that's deliberate. If you destroy the language of a culture, you have destroyed the culture. You have taken away the people's vitality and life. And that has been done, so you have no history any longer, you have no foundation, you have no framework, you have no knowledge to build upon. So that's why kids are dumbed down in their school systems. They're just brainwashed. All it is brainwashed. You're just simply training them to be slaves. You're training them to be docile slaves without any capacity to discern right from wrong, truth from error, or anything else. Now, in the Old Testament, I'm skipping now, from the Bible to the teaching, the piece of paper that I'm building out of this Bible. In the Old Testament, about age 12, young boys were instructed in the sacred writings and were trained, instructed and trained, two different words, instructed in the writings and were trained in their religious duties. So training is moral. Training is physical, learning skills. And so to be trained is not only to learn about, put this robe on, but you're also trained, you actually put the robe on, and then you turn like this, and you go and you hold your hands up like this. So that's training, not just head knowledge, but you're actually being instructed morally, and then physically, you know exactly what to do. Today, young kids are not given that kind of training or knowledge. They don't get any kind of moral training in schools because the morals are silly morals. They're not given by the society. What we teach at our home is not what they're going to teach in school. They're going to teach them if there were four people. That's right. And so there's a lot of confusion in the world today. And no one knows exactly how to train or teach anymore. But I was trained in the old school, in the classical school. And while all of the people in my college and then in my seminary were heading for sociology, psychology, and what you would call the more delicious and more interesting new fields that had risen up lately since 1958, 1959, and so on, I was going back to the classics, and I wanted to get a deeper education. I wanted to go to the bottom. And most people did not want to know the old classical education, where you actually read the originals, where you actually, read the writings themselves in their own language and try to gain a knowledge. Today, because of the internet, you have access, if you knew how to teach, you have access to all the original documents, or at least a great many of them, and you can buy them for few dollars, all the old classics. I do. I do. I don't even know how to use the internet or anything, but Peggy knows how, and I tell her what I want. Give me that book and type that thing out and whatever. And so I have not only 30, 40,000, and I don't really know the number, but I buy them all the time. I'm just constantly buying books, hundreds and hundreds every year, thousands of dollars every year just spent on books to keep myself up with the current books and to keep myself acquainted with the old books. So I buy everything that is relevant to whatever I need to be doing. And so I know about economics, I know about politics, I know about society and philosophy and poetry and whatever else, education, whatever, because I'm a student of the Bible. Because I'm a student of the Bible, I want to know everything about God and everything about His world. So I am trained economically and politically and philosophically and theologically and so on to know everything. Because you should be a leader in whatever it is you're doing. You don't have any right to have children if you're not going to teach them, and they're going to look to you as the teacher. And you cannot say, well, when you go to school, you'll learn. You are the teacher. You are always their first teacher and their greatest teacher. Because you are the only one today that's even going to teach them right from wrong. It's even going to spank them. It's even going to instruct them in a way that they would get wisdom rather than foolishness and folly. Without the rod, you cannot drive folly from a child. You have to have a rod. You have to have, when you give a teaching or instruction, they might fall asleep. So you have to be able to spank them and keep them awake. They used to have, in church, they used to have ushers that had long poles. And if you fell asleep, they would bonk you on the head. Or if you were just sitting there sort of dozing, they had a feather on the other end and they would tickle you. You'd wake up. And so they kept you alert. You were there. It's like you are here to hear God's word. Do not fall asleep or not pay attention. And you had to, you're there. And then a lot of people were, and so on. So they would just come around and tickle you or bonk you on the head and so on and so forth. So you paid attention. And that was the job of the usher, not like our ushers, just helping you find a seat. They were bonking you on the head and tickling you under the chin. But it showed how serious instruction was, because those people have been trained in the Bible. They have been trained in the Bible. Now, interestingly, even in China and in other parts of the world, they take education very seriously. Only the top, probably 0.5% or 1% or 2% of Indians or of Chinese or of Oriental peoples make it to the top. They make it so rigorous that even if you're fairly good, you won't make it. You have to be excellent. You have to be the top. And that's why when the Chinese come over here, they're not smarter than Americans. They're just fewer out of that, millions and millions of people that actually get through the system. The most of the Chinese are not that educated at all, But the point is that other nations are smarter than we are now, learning the old way of just simple rote facts. But that's only transmission. But they're also beaten if they don't learn. I mean, it's severe competition and severe pain and stress. That's the old way of teaching. Nothing wrong with it. It's the best way to learn. Unfortunately, our people are soft today. I don't know why they don't have couches in schools yet and TV sets so they can, in case they get bored with the teaching, they can go watch TV. I'm not sure why they're not doing that. But at any rate, we have degenerated a long way from our founding fathers. But in the Old Testament, age 12, young boys were instructed in the sacred writings and were trained in their religious duties. They became sons of the Torah. So that's what they are called in the Jewish tradition. That's what they have been called from the beginning. Not sons of the soil, but sons of the Torah. In other words, if you're the son of the soil in Israel, you have to be the son of the Torah. You have to receive the teaching. But it's true in Africa as well. If you're the son of the soil, you're also someone who knows the traditions that have been handed down by the elders from father to son. Their period of instruction was aiming to make you a son of the Torah, not to start you. But when you were finished, then you were called son of the Torah. In other words, you had the knowledge of God's word, of God's holy word. The Torah teaching, number two, referred to the first five books of the Hebrew writing. So put your hand up like this with five fingers on it. Okay, so the first is the foundation, Genesis, and then Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And so they would teach their children, Deutero means two, nomos, and this is the Greek word for the Hebrew word, but the second giving of the law. So the Exodus was the first giving, Exodus 20, and over here, Deuteronomy 5. So those two, this is the when they came out of Egypt, when they came out of Egypt through the Exodus, they heard the law for the first time, and then 38 years later, or 40 years later, basically, they heard it for the second time just before they went into the land, because every generation should hear again, afresh, not only parts of it, but the whole thing read. And so Moses read the whole thing all over again, or gave them the law all over again and repeated it, because every generation needs to repeat what was taught to the last generation. So that's the teaching of the Torah. The Levitical, which is in the middle, is the priestly, the Levites. This was just basically for them. So now you're learning the Genesis, how it all began. Abraham was the foundation. Then you're learning Exodus through Moses many, many years later, almost 2,500 years into the world is Moses. So the first book, it lasted 2,500 years. So Genesis is a big book, accounted as the foundational book of the Bible. And everything that's in Revelation started out in Genesis as a seed, as a Genesis genetics seed. So you learn these five books, and when I was trained in my training, in my schooling, not in public school, but in church, I was trained catechetically, the catechesis, one part of which was the Ten Commandments. So we learned what each commandment meant. Today, we need to do it again. In fact, I've instructed some people here to do that, and we're going to start that again sometime, is to train every child that's 12 years old, boy and girl, in the catechism, which is the creed and the Lord's Prayer and the Ten Commandments and baptism and the Lord's Supper, those five elements. And so just as similar to the Jewish bar mitzvah, to the Jewish training at 12, 13, 14, whatever, how long it lasts, so also the Christians should take a year or so out and learn, like Norman's son should learn what it is to be catechized. And it's much more than just head knowledge. It's just much more than just memorizing some things like, you know, I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, and in Jesus Christ, his only begotten Son, you know, and so on. It's much more than just memorizing things, although you do that also. There's a lot of memory work to memorizing parts of the Old Testament. And as I've written in here, the Torah teaching referred to the first five books of the Hebrew writings. The word Torah is often translated law, but more properly, that's the denotative. Well, actually, it is not. It doesn't literally mean law, but a lot of people give it as a law because it's a kind of a rule or an instruction manual. It's not about Moses' law. That's only one of the books, or two of the books, or three of the books, depending on how you want to look at it. But it's not actually Genesis is not have law at all. There is no law there. It's just conscience and the law of the patriarchs and so on. So these first five books are instructions or teachings. The word Torah is often translated law, but more properly, it is more than just learning the law and agreeing to keep all of its precepts. It also meant the reception of the written writings or teachings or traditions of the ancestors, which had been handed down father to son in an unbroken chain. So that tradition or unbroken chain means that you would learn from your father what your father learned from his father, what his father learned from his father, going all the way back to the beginning. So Abraham taught his son Isaac. You remember, one of the things he taught him was to be circumcised. And that was part of the teaching, was to get circumcised. Now, there's no teaching on it, just you go and do it. And it hurts, it's painful. But if it's done on the eighth day, even though it's painful, the little kid grows up not remembering that. It has no memory of that. So I was circumcised, but I was 12. I remember it. It's because I was older. But when you're just a little eight-day-old baby, it's relatively quick and easy, and they do cry, but, you know, in a little while they're over it. But when you're 12, you remember it a little longer. And you remember there's a Bible story about that in the Old Testament, one time when some bad people wanted to get in with the Jewish girls, and the guy, he was outnumbered, and he said, well, okay, there is one condition that you have to meet, and we'll let you marry our girls if you do that. You have to all be circumcised, because these girls are Jewish girls. You know, they weren't Jewish, but they were Israeli. And that if you'll do that. And so they did it, and on the first day, it was all very painful. And then by the second day, it was still very painful. And then they came and attacked them, and they were in utter pain, and they couldn't move. They were so painful, and they killed them all. So the wedding never took place. That's the Jewish way of stopping a wedding. Yes, you can marry my daughter. All you have to do is be circumcised. And then, of course, as the pain increases, you go and chop their head off. That's a circumcision. I didn't tell you how the circumcision ends. This is how it begins. This is how it ends. Chop their heads off. Number three, in the beginning, the teacher was the boy's father or a close relative who personally introduced the son to the teachings and read them to him and taught them to him most diligently. Now, again, in my own family, I did that, not just with my son David, but with all the kids. I taught them and read them from the Bible. And when they were 12, I particularly took them off for 3 days and read the whole book of Proverbs with them, taught them how to read the Bible, how to pray, how to keep a journal, and many other things about living a godly life, how to actually have a good moral conduct, and how I was going to raise you after this, and what about dating and makeup, and we discussed everything that might come up about being fair and not cheating and lying. And I confessed that I had done some of that and how it was wrong. And so my kids got to know me at age 12, an excellent time to know the whole truth about your mother and father. That is what I wanted to tell them, so that they would not be fooled by us. And my children, I remember when David was 18 or some age, the boys around him were talking about their dads, and they were calling him my old man or whatever. And they were not speaking about their fathers in a nice way. And David said, well, I love my father. And they were all kind of surprised. And they said, why? And he said, because my dad never lied to me. He always told me the truth. Wow. He came home and told us that. It's not the only reason I know about it. And it's like, wow, you said that? That's cool. I never even thought about that. But that is what happened. And he respected me because I taught him no lies. I didn't lie to him. I told him everything. And that's true. That's one thing. Is I am a transparent person. I would tell anything about myself, but some things wouldn't be helpful. So I'm not. But I'm not afraid to tell anything. I don't really care. I don't have anything to hide. But you might have a problem, so I'm not going to tell you something that's going to burden you down. But the truth is, once you become a Christian, you are free of your past. And though it's shameful, I'm not ashamed that I was, that I did shameful things. It's to the glory of God right now, because I wouldn't today love Jesus if it weren't for the fact that I was a sinner, and then I saw the light. Someone showed me the way. You know what it was? My Father in heaven taught me. My Father in heaven taught me. Now, there were humans that taught me things, but I would say for the most part, my human teachers were not that godly. I would say for the most part, my human teachers were ungodly. I turned out ungodly because I was raised by ungodly parents in an ungodly world, in an ungodly environment. And had I gone to church, I might have heard about God, but I doubt that I would have either wanted to be a Christian or been attracted to the hypocrisy that is so prevalent in our churches. So I am not a hypocrite. I will never be a hypocrite. I've always told you the truth. I'll always tell you the truth. I will speak the truth to you at my peril. In other words, I don't care that I have a reputation when I'm done, but I'm going to tell you the truth. I won't make myself look good. I'll make Jesus look good. I'm not trying to make myself attractive. I'm trying to make Jesus truly what he is. He is the beautiful one. He is the wise one. He is the great one. He is the good one. In the beginning, the teacher was the boy's father, number three, or a close relative who personally introduced the son, or his pupil, to the teachings and read them to him and taught them to him most diligently. Deuteronomy 6:4 talks about that. When you're in the house, you know, teach them, and they're written on the walls, and they hear the words, and you know, in every way, visually and auditorially, in every way, everything in the house says God loves you, or the truth about God, or whatever. Age 12 was considered the age when a son could accept responsibility for himself and entry into manhood. So when you're 12, that is considered the time when you're ready to be a man. And after a year or two, depending on how long it takes to instruct you in the basic things of the faith and in conduct and in character and so on, after that period of time, you are now a son of the Torah. You are now well taught. You now know the scriptures. And so we have gotten away from that now, but I was raised that way. Catholics still catechize. Lutherans still catechize. And Anglicans. But Anglicans only do it a week or two. We had 2 years instruction, similar to the Catholic training. But Catholics like to do it all the way from the time they're real little until they're all the way through high school, which is good. I have no problem with that. It's just I don't believe in the Catholic teaching or doctrine. I believe at a certain point, you got to teach them the good news, the gospel. And many Catholics have more ritual and more darkness and more ignorance and what I would call superstition than they do biblical teaching. I believe the Bible is the foundation of all instruction. I believe the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. The fear of the Lord you cannot get just out of your religious tradition. The religious tradition is human. I don't want religious tradition. We have some. Sitting in a pew is a religious tradition. It's not in the Bible. There's no pew in the Bible. So I don't accept this tradition as being of God. Anyway, it won't kill you. But my point is, that is not important. You know, whether we have chairs, or whether we all stand, or whether we sit in pews, or whatever, it's set up for the convenience of the pastor, actually, so that you can control the people and, you know, keep them from getting out and have to sit in their chair and look this way. But actually, a lot of it's just tradition. It has nothing to do with the way Jesus was taught or anything else. They used to sit in benches along the side, and then the Torah scrolls would be up front and so on and so forth. So it's not exactly biblical what we're doing, but it doesn't hurt anything. It's not devastating. It's not essential. What we're doing is non-essential. So there's a lot of things that we do that are called adiaphora, indifferent. They're just indifferent. They don't save you or keep you from going to heaven or something. But in the things that are important, we have to get rid of tradition. There can be no tradition unless it's God's tradition in the Holy Bible. And that tradition is what I maintain without fear of man. Age 12 was considered the age when a son could accept responsibility for himself and entry into manhood under his father's leading and instruction, direction, and training. The son would listen to his father's reading and then commit large portions of the Torah to memory. So a son would actually memorize huge portions. In fact, there are some Jewish fathers that teach their children to memorize the entire Torah, the first five books. They memorize every Hebrew word completely. Now, when you're 12 years old, you can still do that. It's harder when you're older, but not when you're a young child. Young children actually are very good at memory. You just read it over and over again, and pretty soon it sinks in. I remember our daughter, Cara, when she was in school, she could get her memory verses, and she could learn them almost by listening to them, and she had them memorized. Now, all children are not good at memory, but she was unbelievable that she could hear it a couple of times and have it. And, you know, we went through it, and, you know, first few she had to learn them and so on, but after a while she just caught on so fast, and she would know all of her memory verses, and that you get a reward for that in certain school systems, and in her Christian Bible Baptist school system, that she got all the rewards because she always knew all her scriptures. And she was the best one. I mean, she knew, Dad wants me to do this, and I did. I was very proud of her and rewarded her and so on and so forth. So I was very happy that she did that. But it's good training. It doesn't mean she understood it. It just means she simply memorized it. How many know that's not instruction? But it's the beginning. It's the beginning. She did it out of fear to me, out of, you know, love to me. She wanted to please Dad, and it's important to Dad, and maybe it's important to Jesus, but I don't know what she was really thinking. She just did it. And so later on, she becomes more self-conscious. But at that time, at third grade or fourth grade or fifth grade, they're just simply memorizing like they're told. Little kids can learn so much. It's amazing. You get a fifth grader, they can learn every insect in the world. I mean, it's amazing. You can say any word, and they know it in Latin or whatever. Little kids in the fifth and sixth grade are sponges. You know, if you were going to be a teacher, ideal time, fifth and sixth. Oh, man, it's great. Just before they become self-conscious teenagers, and just after they're just learning their ABCs and tying their shoelaces, you know, get them there in fifth and sixth grade. That would be an ideal time. I think all times are ideal with kids. Kids are just great. But they don't care about, you know, how many socks they have on or anything when they're in fifth and sixth grade. But they can tell you all the baseball players or all the football things or how many airplanes were in World War II or everything. You give a child that age a challenge, they will read encyclopedias and memorize them. If you had a set of encyclopedias and you said, you know, this is your schoolwork for the year, they could read through them. I'm just telling you, you have no idea what you have there. It's a treasure. Once you read them, you know, learn to read in the first and second grade, and you read to them, and pretty soon they're reading their own words, you could just turn them over to your library, and that's how people used to learn, by the way. And fathers would oftentimes just sit there and read to the children 2-3 hours, 4 hours with their kids. That's a great way to learn, is just listen, 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 until the kids get old enough to say, Dad, let me read. And then they begin to articulate and read. They've heard the tonality of your voice. They've heard the rhythm. They've heard the mood and the nuances and so on. Don't let children just read, because then they just sound like the kids do today. Dullards, and they're just flat, you know. John went to the store. You know, that's how they read on their own, because that's when they read that way in first grade. But if the teacher is the one who's doing the reading and they're listening. I remember even in the third grade, we were always listening to the teacher. We knew how to read, but we were listening to the teacher who could read it with such drama. And you learn to pick that up, and it's mellifluous. It's something onomopoetic. You know, it's just beautiful. It's something, I don't know, I enjoyed it. You just could lay your head on the desk and just listen to the teacher. It's great. I tell you, children, we don't let children be children long enough. We hasten them to be geniuses or something or other, and leave them alone. Let them learn for a long time from you. We never send our kids to kindergarten. I don't believe in kindergarten. I hate kindergarten. I don't believe in it. I don't know if you heard what I just said. I said it clearly. Keep them at home as long as you can, under your protection, under your care, under your love. Keep them at home as long as you can. And if you can homeschool, homeschool. Because that is the way they learn character, which they'll never learn in school. They're not listening to swear words from other kids at school. They're not listening to all the garbage and trash that goes on in the schoolroom. And they're not learning nonsense, like if there were 4 people in the boat and one was your mother and only 3 people could stay, who would you kick out? You know, they're not learning that kind of nonsense that they learn in schools today, who are teaching transformational things which they know nothing about. You're actually doing witchcraft and Satanism. That is the worst thing you could do to a child, is to teach them not only to dumb them down, but to Satanize them. They're not able to think, and they're, what they do think are things that are not right. You're teaching them an ethics that is not good. That kind of teaching comes from limited resources. If the earth is full of limited resources and there's too many people on the earth, shouldn't we kill a billion people? It's that kind of thinking. And that kind of thinking started when I was in high school. I remember it. I remember it vividly. I remember it to the minute, the second that I was taught that. Is there now, I think they said 3 or 4 billion people at that time, and it's too many. We can't sustain that many. And in the future, there's going to be, you know, 6, 10, and so on and so forth. So we've got to get rid of people right now because there's too many on the earth. And we need wars every few years to wipe out people. It's one of the reasons why they fought World War II. It's one of the reasons why they intended to fight another war and another war and another war. And every few years they'd fight wars to kill off slews of people, especially people that don't count. You don't want to have wars here, but you want to have wars in some jungle or some desert or some far-off country where the people are ignorant and dumb and all they have is stupid cultures, not like ours. Well, that kind of thinking has destroyed our world, and I tell you, I don't want my children to be learning in such a school system that teaches those things. There's only so many bananas in the world, and monopolists, you know, grab them, and so we got to kill off the monopolists. There's all kinds of nonsense that comes from witchcraft people. Your curriculums are written by people that are all leftists and rebellious people, and people that are just Satanists, socialists, communists, you know, idiots. So I don't believe in any of that. And I early on saw through all of that kind of brainwash, and I don't know why, but I did. And I was intending to be one of those people. You know, I would have been an evil person. So thanks be unto God that Jesus got a hold of me. Number 4, Torah teaching was much more than merely hearing and memorizing and gaining head knowledge. In the Latin, that would be called fides historica, a mere head knowledge or faith in the head. And your learning should not just be superficial. Today, I would say this, maybe 2% of the children in school get real knowledge. The rest, just a mere acquaintance with concepts. The merest, most superficial acquaintance. When they're done from first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, all the way up through high school, they have only become acquainted with some words, some concepts, some ideas of the past with no knowledge, with no mastery, with no skills. So the teachers are not even themselves able to teach it. They don't know it themselves because they were taught in the same dumbed-down schools, which went to dumbed-down teacher training schools. And so the teachers are only taught psychology and games and manipulation and processing kids and brainwashing. And they don't even know it because they're deceived themselves. So the teachers don't even know why they're teaching what they're teaching and why the kids aren't paying attention. And now you don't have a spanking stick to even make them pay attention. So you're transmitting no knowledge to students. You're just basically babysitting a bunch of rebellious kids, and you can't do anything about it. So it's a very frustrating thing. Teachers leave by the droves, just as lawyers quit lawyering and doctors quit doctoring, because nobody can figure out anymore why they originally went into the field they went into. The scientific community is better off. The engineers are still better off. The tech people are better off because at least they're learning some hard facts about things. You have to know what the concepts are, and you have to be able to use them powerfully. So we tend today to be a completely at sea world. The whole world's at sea. The only people that still learn are the people out in the bush that we consider primitives. They still learn some traditional things, and you know, their feet are still on the ground. Maybe what they're learning isn't worth anything, but their process of teaching is very simple and straightforward. We can't do that anymore. But I'm looking at this moment about how they learned in the Old Testament. Torah teaching was much more than merely hearing the father read, memorizing a bunch of verses, and gaining head knowledge. It was also training and instruction in morals, in moral character and holy conduct. So you were taught to bow. You were taught to lift your arms. You were taught to stand, to sit. You were disciplined. And you were not allowed to go to the bathroom and do all the things you just want to do whenever you feel like doing them. You were highly disciplined. And the teacher yelled and screamed at you. You understood what authority was. It is that way still in the East today. If you go to the Middle East today, whether it's Christian or Jewish or Muslim, it's the same way they still teach. They yell at the children, "Pay attention!" And the child pays attention, because the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. You're not going to learn if the teacher just lets you snooze or walk around the class or poke other kids in the arm. None of that happens in those settings. Every child's reading together. You go to Russia, they also teach in Russia the same way. They don't teach the American way. You pay strict attention. Achtung! And you have to, you know, and I love that kind of thing. That militaristic thing is very good, because you are breaking the will of the child. Now you're going to teach them something. Hopefully it will be the Word of God. If it's not, of course, it's tragic. And, of course, in most cases, it's not. But we have the opportunity to use techniques that fit the Bible. And the Jews were taught not only knowledge, but character and conduct. 5. Head knowledge is only a superficial acquaintance of the ways of God and the ways of the world. And all kinds of ways, such as many children today learn in their schools, without any grasp of what is true knowledge. True knowledge, da'at, that's the kind of tree of knowledge, is not possible to man unless God himself teaches a man deep in his heart by special revelation. So you can tell this is not head knowledge, this is heart knowledge. Where do you get heart knowledge? Not from the school system. Heart knowledge is going to come from the church. But our Sunday school system does not, I'm not criticizing our Sunday school, but they're not teaching heart knowledge. They might by accident teach some heart knowledge. But heart knowledge comes from all these things that they're doing back there, and hopefully the children are falling in love with Jesus, getting saved, being filled with the Holy Spirit, doing things that change their conduct as well as their character, as well as their head. They're not just back there to learn about Mary and Joseph. They're back there to learn to be like Mary and Joseph, to have the same kind of moral training and the same kind of conduct that Mary and Joseph might have had. So those stories are deliberately intended by God to be the basis of knowledge, character, and conduct. So true knowledge, da'at, is not possible to man unless God himself teaches a man deep in his heart by special revelation. Call that revelation galah. That is to uncover by spiritual insight from heaven. So if something is hidden, not clear, then take the covering off of it to make it clear. I am such a teacher. I teach everything to make it clear to you. I'll uncover all the mysteries. I'll take back the curtain so you can learn exactly how things are. So here, you don't know what's behind this thing. It could be a machine gun. You don't know what's behind here. But I teach in such a way that you get a full revelation of everything. There's nothing behind there. It's just a bare wall. But I don't let anything be covered. I will make naked or uncovered the way God would have it uncovered for your heart, for your soul, for your body, for you, so that you may grow up in every way to be like Christ. I know exactly why I'm teaching, what I'm teaching, and how to get there. Man cannot eat of the tree of knowledge. He cannot eat of the tree of knowledge to gain truth. I put can eat, but it's cannot. So right in there, cannot. Man cannot eat. Don't worry, these are just notes I scribble off rapidly. So there's nothing sacred about these notes. And they're not well thought out and so on and so forth. They're just scribbled quickly in my Sunday afternoons after my Sunday morning teaching and my Sunday other morning teaching, and then, you know, the lunches we have to go out with people and whatnot and all this stuff. Man cannot eat of the tree of knowledge to gain truth, emet, to gain truth. So there's nothing wrong with the tree of knowledge. I told you it's actually God's knowledge. That tree is actually God's knowledge. But how are you going to get it unless God himself, who made that tree, and that's the knowledge where he gets knowledge, or that is his knowledge, unless he instructs you? That's why the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. He's the only one that can instruct your heart. No human being can instruct your heart. Communists can't instruct the heart. They can only shape behavior, but not instruct the heart. They can mess up your mind, but they can't instruct your heart. Man cannot eat of that tree to gain knowledge, which the Lord makes a man strong and steadfast to him without deviation. So if you want truth, you have to measure up with God, who is the only one that can teach you how to measure up with God, because he'll say, here, I'm the way, look here. And you will line up your eyes with God. If you are meditating on the wrong person, you're going to learn from the wrong person. So don't deviate. When God tells you the truth, for example, I've told you, this book is the only true book in the world. Any other book that's written, even if it's a Christian book, any other book is less than perfect truth. This is the only book that's perfect truth. Even if I would write a sentence or two that's from the Holy Spirit and of God, it still has to be tested by this book. This is the only book that is perfect. My book might have some truths in it. It might even have some spiritual guidance in it or some spiritual revelation in it. But I would not say it was the inspired word of God. I would just simply say it's a deduction from, it's drawn from, it's taken out of, and it might have some value, some edification, and I hope it does. But the truth is, only God's word is true. My little teachings are less than light. They're not, they're whatever light they had is derivative. It's secondary. It's the moon compared to the sun. You know, it's not the sun itself. It's a hopefully it's a reflection. Hopefully. And you always have to pray when you write anything. Be careful of writing. There's too many books in the world already. And that's why I haven't written a lot of books or anything, because there's too many books out there. Nevertheless, I'm going to write some books. But you know, it's very scary to do so, because a lot of words don't mean anything unless they're guided by and deducted from God's word. So the books I read, if you'll read the books I've read, they're just basically saying the scriptures. Because that's basically all a book could be, is arranging the scriptures, and then there's nothing wrong with that. That actually is pleasing to God, and that's why he wrote it. So you could go and take his book and then write your own out of what he wrote. Just kind of repeat what he said and arrange it and rearrange it and so on for the people to eat on a daily basis, so that they can, because if they try to eat this whole word, they just get confused. So sometimes you write something or preach something or say something or do something based on this word. Well, that still has some merit to it, and it's the only thing that has merit to it. Number six, the Father wishes to give more than simple training or teaching, yara. Now, yara is a Hebrew word which means showing the way, to show the way. You remember Jesus said, I am the way? Yara. Yara. It's also to direct, as when you shoot an arrow. So if I was to shoot an arrow, I would shoot it in a certain direction. So this kind of instruction or knowledge or training is, it's superficial. It's showing you the way. It's pointing in the direction. It's not actually taking you there. It's just showing you the direction. So teaching in the beginning starts out with yara. It's kind of a simple, taking the simple and giving him a little bit of direction. Otherwise, the simple will go in any old direction. So you train children. No, you will not do that. Sit down right there. And I want you to fold your hands. Listen to me. All right? That's yara. They still don't know anything, but they're learning by the stick, and they're learning by your voice, and they're learning that you're an authority. Today, there are no teachers with authority. Teachers don't have authority today. Teachers have no authority because you can't back it up with any power. They have no authority. So all they can do is brainwash, but they have no authority. So no matter what they teach, there's no backup. They can't even appeal to the parent. Oh, they can write the parent and call the parent, but most of the parents aren't even there. If they do come, they're often on something, and you know, they've only got one parent or whatever. So there's nothing. It just doesn't work anymore. The whole thing is broken down, and it'll never work. You cannot fix it up. I don't care how much you spend or do or think. You can't do it. But we could do it here. The Father wishes to give more than simple teaching, yara, showing the way or directing the arrow to the true path. Remember, Jesus said, I am the way. That's yara. He said, I am the truth. Emet. In other words, I'm going to show you the true way. I'm going to lead the way or put the light on. Or instruction, lamad. Lamad is to guide the learner to deeper knowledge. So lamad, like yara, is a word that means, let me take you and show you the way. That's why Jesus came, to show us the way. And that's why he said, I am the truth. Come with me. Come follow me. A disciple is someone who begins by following Jesus. So wherever he goes, the disciples went. Wherever he ate, they ate. Wherever he slept, they slept. Wherever he walked, they walked. And he always was the teacher. They were never the teacher. Disciples do not learn. You cannot learn today because you have no teachers with authority. A teacher has to have authority. He cannot be just giving you opinions or options. Well, you know, there's lots of ways to go. You could be a communist or a socialist or maybe a capitalist or, you know, or just giving options, and that's the way they teach today. Just say a bunch of words and give kids confusion, utter confusion. We don't teach that way. We say there's two ways to go in the world, the bad way and the good way. Here's the good way. Don't go the bad way. That's teaching. That's teaching with authority. There's no ambiguity there as well. You know, you can try monarchy or maybe aristocracy or a democracy where the people rule. Of course, there's demagogues. And you can talk and talk and talk and it's worthless because you didn't tell them what it is that's true. Our founders said, yeah, there are many ways, kings and aristocracies and democracies. We hate all those. We're going to go with a republic of laws. And they defined it clearly. They weren't ambiguous. They did it with authority. They said, we rule here in the name of God and in the name of the people's authority that God gave to them. We do not rule in our own name. So Jefferson was not a founder. He was just simply a writer for the founding generation. But they had to ratify whatever they said. That's authority. We've lost all authority. We lost it in the 19th century, and the 20th century didn't even know what the word meant. Today, authority is a gun. Today, authority is, you know, what some judge makes you do and then coerces you to do so, or the IRS forcing you to pay your tax. That's authority. Today, it's nothing. It's just pure brute force. There's no reason behind it. There's no law behind it. There's no constitution behind it. It's called arbitrary law. You do not have the rule of law in this country. There are no laws. There are pieces of paper. They call them paper parchment. Just simply a piece of paper. It has no meaning. It's something politicians say to fool you and opiate you so that then they can go and do whatever they want to do with the business community or with the communists or anybody else they want to deal with. Deeper knowledge comes by the rod and the staff. We have lost that. Again, don't look to the world to get this. I don't want it in the school system. Let's take our kids out of the school system, teach them at home, teach them in some kind of religious school through chastisement. Real knowledge comes through chastening. I'm sorry. The way that they teach today, there's no rod, there's no staff, there is no instruction. Today it's just entertainment. It's just government school babysitting. That's all. It's keeping them out of the workforce until they're old enough to work. Then they're given their chains, and they call them diplomas, but they're just chains, and now they can go and you know, make a wage. And when they find out how it is in the real world, it isn't by anything you learned in the school. Because what you learn in the school is, you know, just to get along. And so, you know, some girls just prostitute themselves right away, and some guys just, you know, get on dope and go into the army. They don't know what they're doing. There's no attempt to train anybody. We want it that way. It's done deliberately. It's not accidental. It's done deliberately to dumb down the people and to enslave them and oppress them. And they don't even complain anymore. They don't even say anything. It's just a few people who remember the old days or something. Maybe they watched an old movie or something. I don't know what. Training a child, one more word there. Musar means learning by much suffering and difficulty. Jesus said he learned obedience through what, David? Through what he suffered. That's how you learn obedience. It isn't just head knowledge. You're learning obedience. Well, that's different. That's moral character. That's moral training through what you suffer. That's how you learn. Somebody needs to apply a little suffering to you. Or you learn by going out and trying and you find out, I don't know what I'm doing. That's how you learn. You learn the hard way. So chastisement is always for your good. You're always being chastised. If I ever have a church, and I'm not going to claim I have one, but if I ever have a church, it'll be people that can take the roughness of authority. There won't have to be any humor and any jokes like there is on Sunday morning. There doesn't have to be humor and jokes. That's why Jesus told humor and jokes. When he gives the parables, they're just parables. There's no authority to them. They're just parables. A man went out to sow and so on and so forth. There's no authority behind them. When he ends the parable, then the authority takes place. He says, go and do likewise. Now that's authority. But the parable itself is a joke. It's like swallowing camels and straining out gnats. It's a joke. There's nothing put, there's no pressure put on the hearer. He hears it and he doesn't know what it means. But to the disciples, you tell them, to Sunday morning church, it's parables. It's just crowds. It's just people who get parables. They have no concept of what you're talking about. They hear me saying words as though I'm earnest, but it's pure entertainment. But in real church, it's with authority. And only believers are there, and there's no jokes. It goes straight to the heart of the matter. We don't have such people. Because people today want to be entertained. They go and come because they want tickled ears. They want to be tickled and learn things that will only destroy them and kill them. When you speak to a child, with my children, I did not raise them as I do on Sunday morning the church. I raised them with a rigid, you know, ironclad law. You will do this. You will not do that. Here's the consequence to this. That's because I loved them. The father that loves his son chastens him, beats them. Today, you can't beat people even with words, because if you do, they'll run away. It's too easy to go to another church. Well, let's just go to another church, and I've already lost a ton of people anyway, because I'm getting older, so I have to get with it pretty soon. I have to say that with humor, because I'm not sure everybody understands always. But Jesus did not teach always with jokes. So, musar means learning by much suffering and difficulty, and one learns the fear of God. So, it's the fear of God. You cannot be instructed until you have the fear of God. Instruction is built upon the fear of God. Fear of God is first. We don't have such people today. Now, Sunday night, different. You are the group that have come here deliberately. You don't have to. You wanted to. You know why? You have the fear of God. You want to know. It's your prayer is, Pastor, teach it all. Say it straight. Don't joke it. Just say it direct. Don't give a parable. Don't say it indirectly. Be clear. Say exactly what you want. That's why we're here. Now, would that our Sunday morning church would all be here on Sunday night, like Baptist Training Union, to be trained then, not just, you know, preach to kind of stir people up and get them, you know, scared of hell and so they'll run toward heaven. We don't do that, and we won't do that. 7. Training a child in the ways of God means to bring him to wisdom, chokma, learning to do what is right and avoid what is wrong in the master's sight. So when you gain wisdom, wisdom is built upon knowledge. You have to have a certain amount of knowledge to have wisdom, because you have to be able to discern right from wrong. What is right? What is wrong? Avoid the wrong, do the right. That's wisdom. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord. You have to do what the master teaches, the teacher. So there's a teacher that's necessary in an authority system. The kind of teachers we have today have no authority. Now, my daughters teach in the public school, but they teach with authority. My daughters, both of them, Kirsten, the second one, and then Margaret, the last one, they teach with great authority, and the superintendent, without any understanding of why, loves it. Because she gets absolute discipline out of the most unruly children, the most maltreated, misbehaved children. She gets them to absolutely obey. But she is rigid as you can be. Hey, sit down. And she means it. I'm going to tell you, she means it. And they all whisper in the halls, don't get Mrs. Borchert. She's so mean. But her children love her. The most rebellious kids in the school, their parents don't even attempt to discipline them, but she is able to get everything out of those children. How? Same child. Same child goes home and the mother has no control. She gives him to Margaret's class, and you will sit, and you will sit still, and otherwise you are going home. You know, Margaret is rigid, and that little girl loves Margaret, and that little boy loves Margaret. Isn't that amazing? Because why? Because someone says, you are worthwhile, and I know you're not a loser, and you're going to learn to discipline and sit still. And you're going to do exactly what I say. All right, no recess for you. Sit here until you get that done. I want to go out and sit right there. You're either getting out of the school or you're going to sit here and do your homework. And you are not going to recess until you learn to do what I say. That is teaching with authority. Did you hear what I just said? You're going to be exactly as I am. That's the way we raised her. That's the way she's raising them. It wasn't just the school system she went to, which was rigid, but it was also her parents who were rigid. We are tough. on them. So all of my kids are happy because the world is a piece of cake compared to mom and dad. It's just a piece of cake. They get out in the world just fluffy. And they don't care because they don't need to get along with anybody or anything like that. They learned the rigid way. So they just think it's easy in the world. They can't imagine their girlfriend sleeping around and doing all the stupid things that they do. Because our girls didn't do any of that. They don't have to do it. They don't need to do it. And all their friends are always coming to them for advice. Well, how do you do it? You know, how come you're not nervous? Or why aren't you afraid? Or why are you happy all the time? And our kids are admired by all their friends who went out and experimented, did whatever they wanted to do, ended up in trouble after trouble after trouble after trouble till they're utterly confused. They have no foundation and no basis. Our kids are comfortable anywhere. Doesn't matter where they go. Why? Disciplined. You must discipline children with fear, with the rod of oppression. It's good for you. Training a child in the ways of God means to bring him to wisdom, chokmah, or chokmah. It's actually a hard H. It's not aspirated, but it's guttural. Chokmah. Say it. Chokmah. Chokmah. Do it. Chokmah. It sounds like you're spitting. Now, an aspirated H is soft. Chokmah. You see, it is soft, aspirated. But that's the way it is. Learning to do what's right and avoid what's doing wrong in the master's sight. The son must be made aware of God's word until he has reverential fear. Yada. You've heard of yada, yada, yada? You've heard people say that? It's a Jewish word. Yada, yeah, yada, yada, yada. What it means is gaining fear through instruction, getting deeper and deeper into the knowledge until you fear God. So yada, yada, yada just doesn't mean saying a bunch of nonsense. It means et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It means actually gaining deeper and deeper fear of God as you go along. Yada, yada, yada. Does not just mean yada, yada, yada. It means all the stuff that God requires. Able or ability to grasp with discernment and skillful understanding in a comprehensive way. In other words, if you were raised in a Jewish Orthodox home today, you would get a yada, yada, yada education, where you would learn to be discreet, you would learn to distinguish, you would know all the differences, you would be comprehensive, you would know the whole field. They don't just learn superficially. Jewish people do not believe in that. Even if they went to a public school, which most of them don't, but even if they did, they have all the training at home and all the training in the synagogue that prevents them from just being a uneducated, dumbed-down culture. The Jewish people are highly educated in math and in science and in theology and in business and in everything. Whatever they do it with a passion and a gusto. It isn't just knowledge, head knowledge. Anybody can read a book. It's more than that. It's moral training. It's spiritual training. It's discipline. It's through suffering. And they have pressure on them. I mean, tremendous pressure from their parents. You will not be a street sweeper. You're going to be a banker, a lawyer, or a doctor, or something like that. You're not going to just amount to nothing. Boys and girls. It used to be the girls got away with it, but now even Jewish girls have to go through the same kind of rigorous training. Last page, 8. Finally, a child will be fully instructed and have a perfect understanding, binah. So the word understanding has many, many words, but the normal word for understanding, to gain understanding, means a total, perfect, complete understanding that's fit for whatever it is you're talking about. I mean, it's exact. Binah. So that is wisdom to know when it's really perfect. It's just exactly fit. When a master teaches a student, it's to make him thoroughly masterful himself so that he's exactly like the master. I want you to be exactly like I am. When I'm done, you're going to be exactly like me. So if you don't like me, you won't go very far. If you hate me, you'll have to forgive me after a while and realize that I'm speaking from God, or you're not going to get anywhere. Because you have to be exactly like me. How is that? Well, not like me in looks, not like me, you know, talking and so on, but you're like me in my faith to God, in my passion for the Lord, in my love for Jesus, in my depth of love for this word, the truth. I want to know truth. I don't want to know error. I know all about error. I know all the wrong ways to do it. I've done it or thought about doing it or whatever, but I don't want that. I want now to go the way of the Lord. And to get that, I want you to be exactly like that. So when you're done, spirit, soul, and body, you should be like Jesus. I'm not training you to be like me. I'm training you to be like me in love with Jesus. I'm not training you to be like me, but I'm training you, I'm shooting the arrow to say, go in that direction toward Jesus. I'm showing you the way. I'm not the way. I'm showing you the way. That's why Paul said, be imitators of me. He didn't mean be like Paul. He meant be like Jesus. Finally, a child will be fully instructed and have a perfect understanding, binah, when he is fully taught and trained, not just head knowledge, but trained morally, spiritually, to follow God in all his ways. 9. In later Israel, children were taken by the fathers to the rabbi. Now remember, from the beginning, it was not so. Fathers train their children at home. That's the best training you'll ever get. Homeschooling, home training, that's always the best. But during the exile period, there wasn't always that leisure or that ability, and the rabbis grew up. They took over. Now, whether that's good or bad, it's beside the point. And then they took them to the Torah or to the synagogue school, and they learned the Torah. They learned the law. But they didn't just learn about it. They didn't just read it, just memorize it. They also were trained in it. They were trained how to care for it, and how to sit, and how to stand, and how to speak, and how to argue. They were trained in every way to be masters in the law, to know the original background of it, to know the original language of it, to do all those things so they could apply it, hear it, understand it, construe it correctly, apply it, use it powerfully. So every child is trained in the Jewish tradition, bar mitzvah for the boy and bad mitzvah for the girl. So it's a good work. It's a mitzvah. It's a good work. But it's bar for the boy, and it's bad for the girl. See, girls are bad. That was a joke. In later Israel, children were taken by the fathers to the rabbi at the synagogue school, where they learned from a master teacher, not their father, the knowledge and understanding and wisdom and instruction from God out of the law. They learned out of the law in order to walk in all his ways as a son of the Torah. A disciple, Jesus said, when he's fully taught, will be exactly like his master. He won't be just somewhat like, he'll be exactly like him. In other words, if Jesus is spiritual, you'll be spiritual. If Jesus is moral, you'll be moral. If Jesus is obedient, you'll be obedient. If Jesus suffers with joy unspeakable, you'll suffer with joy unspeakable. Even in the Orient, you can see all these Oriental movies that people love so much. It's only because we've gotten away from the Bible that those have any meaning at all. But they, when they have a disciple, they can kill him. They have life and death in their hands. They can kill that disciple. And they won't even take him on unless they say, I won't have any mind anymore. I won't have, you will have to do everything I say exactly as I say it. Is that understood? Yes. Yes, sir. And they bow completely to it. Well, you cannot, God, that's called idolatry. You cannot make a human being your master. You cannot. And that is a foul way of teaching. But I'm just telling you, it's close to the truth, which is, Jesus is the master teacher. He is the one that you must yield to, but no other man. You must yield to teacher, not to me. I don't want anyone to yield to me. I want you to test everything I say by the word of God. Test every spirit to see whether it be of God. If Jesus Christ came in the flesh, I should talk about Jesus Christ who came in the flesh. Once he came, it's over. That was God's holy son. So I am now his disciple, and I'll always be his disciple. Even if I'm fully taught and I'm able to teach others, I can only do so because I stay under that master and I remember everything he said. If I teach differently than Jesus, if I have a different spirit, if I have a different morals, if I have a different obedience, then I'm of the devil. I'm of the flesh. I am no longer of God. And I want you all to be fully taught so that someday the Lord will look upon and say, you know, who was your teacher? Well, you won't say Jim Borchard. What you're going to say is Jesus Christ. I was taught by the Holy Spirit because I'm not pointing you to me. David's not pointing you to him. We're teaching you to go too. We're shooting our arrow in the direction of Jesus through the Spirit of the living God. And that is true teaching where you don't worship man. You worship only God. Whoever sees, number 10, whoever sees the pupil then, the one that's fully taught, the disciple that's fully taught, will see the teacher in him. He'll see the teacher in him. That's why Jesus said when he was on the earth, show us the Father, show us your teacher, show us your Lord, show us your master, show us the one that's above you. He said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. I'm exactly like the Father. He was fully taught. He was fully taught. He learned obedience through what he suffered. The Father taught me this. Everything that's happening to me, the Father arranged it. What? Wow. That's incredible. That everything that happens to you in this world has been designed by Jesus and it can't hurt you. How many understand that? That gives you a fearlessness about going into any situation. You're not afraid. How many know that you can only grow through it? You can only gain through it. Even if you were cut off entirely, it doesn't make any difference. You're in good shape because you've been taught by the Master. He went through that too. He was rejected too. He was cut off too. What does it do? It just simply shows they heard my teaching. Otherwise, they wouldn't put suffering on me. The reason they're doing it is because they know there's a difference and they're going to kill me because of it. Highest compliment you could be paid. You should rejoice when they beat you for that. You should rejoice when they kill you for that reason. Why? Because they knew you are not one of us. You are different. Highest compliment you can have. God the Father will look upon that with great joy. Huh. They knew that was one of my son's disciples. That was one of the ones that my son taught. That's why they're hated. If you love the Father, you'll hate the world, and they'll hate you. If you're loved by this world, you have no love of the Father. You see? It's different. You want the world to hate you. And right now, there's not enough Christianity in the church today that anyone would hate you. We're not persecuted in this country because you've never been Christian. The kind of head knowledge we have and the kind of superficial, you know, Starbucks-type churches that we have today is not going to make anybody angry. Just have a cup of coffee. Go down in the bowling alley. You know, have these beautiful church structures and so on with the beautiful music and the friendly screens up there and all this stuff. It's all superficial. It's all superficial. No one's gonna persecute you for that. They might be envious of you because you have more goods than they have. You have a beautiful bathroom. They have very nice bathrooms. Ours don't look anything like those. We need to clean them up a little bit. But they have beautiful bathrooms. They're big and they're, you know, palaces kind of thing. You go to these nice churches, it's one of the things that attracts you. And so people go to them. Look at that bathroom. It's just like the Hilton Hotel. And so be it. Ours are like, this is like an outhouse. You know what I mean? It's not as nice. But we're fixing them up a little bit. So I'm being facetious. Because you don't learn by following the world, then you'll just become like the world. And they'll recognize you as one of their own. If you have the same envies, they'll recognize you. But if you are not envious, they won't recognize you. If you're not jealous, they won't recognize you. If you're joyful all the time, they won't recognize you. If you're miserable and you go to the drinking fountain in some business and you're miserable, how's it going? Things are kind of rough. They understand you. They love you. You are, misery loves company. Well, God bless you. I mean, that is wonderful. But if you're at the drinking fountain and you go, hallelujah, praise Jesus. You have a headache? Let me pray for you. They'll hate you. They will not be grateful. This person's harassing me. They're saying Jesus. You know, and they'll send you to, you know, they'll try to get rid of you. They don't want that. You will suffer for that. Could you fire that person? Well, what'd they do? They said Jesus the other day, and I'm offended by that. You are now, that's a hate crime now. You see? And so, you know, this is all a battle going on right here in the world. And people may not understand it, but you are in a war with the devil. And whether it's Satanism or whether it's Islam or whether it's communism or whether it's Catholicism, I don't care what religion it is, it's man-made and it's evil. And you are to live a totally different life. I'm shooting my arrow in a different direction to say, no, wrong, go this way. Go the way of the Lord. Rejoice always. Have no sweat, no worry, no care. Huh. That's not easy. So a lot of people balk from it. You know why? Because they're attracted by people pleasing. They're attracted by getting along in the crowd. You don't suffer if you stay in the boat. You only suffer if you get out in the water and start walking on water. No one's going to persecute you if you stay in the boat. Hey, Peter, where are you going? I'm going to go out and follow Jesus. He said, come to me. I said, Lord, if that's you, bid me come. And he said, come, I'm going. Well, Peter got in trouble and everybody mocked him, but they stood in the boat safe. Hey, Peter, that's dumb. They say, you sank. But they wouldn't get out and walk on the water. And by the way, Jesus saved him. He pulled him up out of the water. He didn't drown. It was just another lesson in Peter. Don't learn to look at the waves. Learn to trust me. Last one. We are to learn to be like God in our faith, our knowledge, our character, and our conduct. Then we will be able to teach our children to follow after us. Today we can't teach our children because we ourselves don't know it. Jesus transmitted knowledge to his disciples, but he was also transforming them. Transmission, transformation, two different words. Spirit, soul, and body, until they attain full stature, Christ-like in every way, in all things. We have God's presence, his authority, his power, his knowledge. We must pass it on to others. God's instruction to us is that fathers should instruct and teach and train their sons. So this is the time, when I say sons, I mean sons and daughters. This is the time for us to train our children in the ways of the Lord. Hallelujah. Until the knowledge of God fills the earth. Till the knowledge of God fills the earth. Train up a child in the way he's go when he's old. He will not depart from it. Hope you are blessed tonight by a little training on child training.